Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the JRPG Report. This is episode 266, and my name is Dalton, and joining me, as always, is my good buddy.
Hey, it's Michaela from Team Retrogue. Finally got our busy butts together to record. How you doing, Dalton?
I am exhausted, my good sir. Work definitely takes it out of me, I'll put it that way. And yeah, it's just hard to tell myself, all right, I'm going to record tonight, and then I end up going to sleep instead. So yeah, that's my bad. How are you?
Well, quick behind the scenes, we were actually supposed to record this episode earlier in the day, and we both passed out.
Yeah, we both fell asleep. Yep.
We both fell asleep. So, that's all you got, Dalton? Just work's kicking your butt?
That and I've been playing a little bit of Dragon's Dogma 2. Picked that up.
What are your thoughts?
Dude, I'm really enjoying it. I've been seeing it's got mixed reviews on Steam, and reading through the reviews, all the negative ones, other than the ones about performance issues, because there are performance issues on the PC version. There is a known CPU bottleneck. But most of people's complaints come off to me as people who are coming to this as their first experience with a Dragon's Dogma game and never played the first one. Because they're complaining about lack of monster variety and things of that nature. And I'm like, this game's just a really good and better version of the first game. So I don't understand why they're complaining personally.
I mean, think I get it, but I don't agree with it. People potentially could be coming into this game after playing another Capcom game called Monster Hunter, which does have a varied monster variety. However, that is not an open world game. And Dragon's Dogma 2, from my understanding, is not just an open world game, but a beautiful, realistic as heck open world game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's massive, dude. And I don't think I've had a loading screen yet, like, as far as going into towns. Even when you use a Rift Stone and you go in to deal with pawns, it just becomes the rift around you, and then you're in it. Like, there's no loading screen. It's impressive.
That's impressive. So it's immersive.
Yeah, and I will say, on my rig, which my rig is no longer top of the line or anywhere near it, I have to run it on, like, medium graphics with DLSS on performance.
Gotcha.
So it if you've got a hefty rig, you'll have no problems. You know what I mean? Like, it's gonna run whatever. But you're still gonna have some issues until they do some patches, which they've released that they have some patches planned for the game. So I'm looking forward to those, because the game can only go up from here.
I actually bought it on PS5 because I heard of all those bottleneck issues. And me being me, I like to play my games on handhelds. So I know this is not going to run on the Steam Deck or any x86 handheld that I have. So my plan is to just fire up Remote Play when I'm home and just play it that way.
Did you ever get one of those PlayStation handhelds?
The Portal?
Yeah.
I did get one. I had it for about 3 months, and then I sold it to a friend of mine because I realized that I had 3 handhelds that could do remote play so much better.
With the PlayStation?
Yeah. Okay. Steam Deck, for example, you can use those 4 buttons in the back of the Steam Deck, and you could set those to be like the PlayStation button or the touchpad button or whatever else. And you can't do that on the Portal. The Portal, you have to touch the screen, and it doesn't always recognize it. So it's like you're pretty much playing without a touchpad. And that's the button that they always use for maps and everything. So it just was so much harder to use. So I ultimately decided to just use the Steam Deck and just map those to the buttons, and good to go. So I had a buddy that's been looking for one for well, I guess since it came out, whenever it came out. So I just sold it to him. And then 2 weeks later, his PS5 started like shutting down randomly because it's overheating. I told him to open it up and put some canned air in it. And he's like, no, I'll just get this cooling fan thing. And he's like, I don't know what to do. It's still not working. I'm like, I don't know. PS5 Slim, I guess.
Man, that's a bummer.
I know. Trust me, I feel the pain. I've lost a couple Xbox 360s in my day.
Yeah, I went through two PS2s because of disk drive issues.
Wow.
And then I had a 360 Red Ring on me eventually. I had GameCube that quit reading discs. Like, yeah.
Oh, man. Disc-based games. Yeah. Kind of. Maybe it's a good thing that the industry's starting to go more digital these days.
So what you been up to, man?
So I've also been getting my butt kicked by work, but that's mostly just because it's the end of the marking period. So all of a sudden you have all the kids who didn't care for 6 weeks finally decide they want to wake up for the last two and beg for passing grades. And we also had SATs. And so it's just been nuts. Plus, my son's had like all his appointments this month. So doctor's appointments and all that nonsense. So I've had to pick him up early from daycare and take him to all his appointments and just come home completely drained and exhausted. But I did manage to play a little game with some losers on this podcast called the Steam Machine Podcast. And we played some Hyperdimension or Mega Dimension. I can never get that right.
It was Mega Dimension Neptunia.
It's Mega Dimension Neptunia.
The one we played was Mega Dimension Neptunia V2.
There it is. Yeah. So played that for a little bit. Going really hardcore into Breath of the Wild for some reason. I don't know why I'm into that game so much, but I have been replaying that game and I've been having a blast on the Steam Deck with durability cheats, so I don't have to worry about the weapons breaking, and I'm just going ham on that game. And then I'm playing some Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which, for how hyped I was about that game, I have not been playing it nearly as much as I should be, because I don't want to play that game with remote play. I actually want to be able to sit down in front of a TV and play it, and just moments like that seem few and far between these days.
I get that, man.
But what I've played about it, what I've played of it, I really like.
What stands out to you?
It's, well, more of the same from Remake, which is fine. But I really like what they're doing to the world. Like, the opening area of Calm is just beautiful. Like, the town is just gorgeous. It is much more beautiful than it was ever portrayed in the original. The flashback was great. You actually get to play as Sephiroth for a little bit, which I thought was cool. And that gets more in depth. It's still like everything from the flashback, but you get to explore more of Nibelheim. You get to actually explore some of the outskirts of Mount Nebel. And like you said with Dragon's Dogma, how you said it was seamless and all that. Mm-hmm. I have also, in Rebirth, not seen a single loading screen. I've seen it jump from gameplay to cutscene back to gameplay, but even that is smooth as heck.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's like you're playing a movie. Like, it's just, it's beyond impressive what games can do now with solid state drives and all that.
Really is. Oh, so, yeah, I can't imagine trying to play Dragon's Dogma on my hard drive.
Like, what do you have it on?
It's on my solid state.
Oh, okay. Like,
it's not on my regular hard drive.
No, that thing would probably chug.
It would massively chug.
I wonder if that's why we've gotten so sensitive to frame rate, because we don't have loading screens anymore. Because loading screens kind of pre-rendered all that stuff beforehand, and now that everything is supposed to be smooth and seamless, whenever they do need to load in assets, if it's not under optimal conditions, we're going to see that frame rate dip.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, for instance, in Dragon's Dogma, because they're loading in everything at once, when you go into big cities and stuff, that's where it starts to tank, whereas in, like, out in the wilderness, it's fine.
Yeah. Again, I'm pretty sure that's because we don't have a loading screen. So we get a frame rate dip instead of a big black screen that says, hey, did you know you can press B to jump?
Yeah, but also, like, with the size of some of the cities, they would have to section them off in, like, different little areas. Kind of like, I guess, Dragon Age Inquisition and the Dragon Age games do.
Oh, okay, yeah, because those are not open world games, but they're kind of open area games.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very much open area. Where they're big and they're vast, but they're only loading that spot at once.
Yeah, and you don't get to see the road in between.
Yeah.
But, you know, we dealt with it. It was fine. We didn't really complain all that much.
I can't wait for those games to come up on the show.
Inquisition is interesting. I'm pretty sure that was like an Xbox One game, right? Like, that was one of the first Xbox One games?
I think so, because it was also on PS4.
Okay. But it was last gen.
Yep.
Yeah, that was also a shift, because that's when we started to get 100-hour games. Like, aside from the Persona series, which is a little bit different, we had never really experienced games that were longer than 40 hours, and all of a sudden you go into Inquisition, it's like an 80 to 100-hour game.
Yeah. Well, you also, like, on the PS4, too, that's when you got, like, The Witcher, which was also, like, a 100-hour game.
Yeah, Persona exactly. Persona 5,
which was a 100-hour game.
Exactly. Which, masterpieces, don't get me wrong, but we weren't used to it back then. I'm still not used to it now.
I don't know, but there were their outliers, because Agrist War came out on PS3, and those games are well over 100 hours long.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So it wasn't really something that wasn't being done. It bled over into, like, the main... Exactly, that's exactly what I was going to say. It bled over into the mainstream.
Yeah.
Like, any game could be 100 hours if you want it to be.
Oh, yeah, you can get thousands of hours out of a game if you want.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just on PC, I've got over 900 hours on Skyrim. So, I mean, that's not that Skyrim, long of a game, but...
No, if you do just main story, you could probably do it in, like, 20, 30 hours, but that's not the point of Skyrim. The point of Skyrim is to screw around and enjoy the world.
I want a JRPG version of a game like Skyrim. I think the closest I can think of would be something like Genshin Impact. But you can't go first person. But give me some, like, first person JRPG stuff. Open world. Doesn't have to be a massive world. Just give me open world.
What's Sword Art like?
Games? I'm not sure. I have them. I should probably install one and see how they are. Because I like that show.
I think that's the general idea between the... Okay. I'm tired already. I think that's the general idea between the Sword Art world. Is that supposed to be like an anime-style open world, like MMO? But I don't know if that ever translated into a game. Like, I don't think there's actually a Sword Art MMO that I'm aware of.
No, there's just games. There's solo player games that I know of. Well, you can play multiplayer with your friends, I think. But listeners, if there's a game out there that I'm looking for that I don't know of, and you do, please tweet it to me at JRPG Report on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it.
Twitx.
You want to get into some news, my good sir? Twitx.
Yeah. I'll start us off. So this first story comes from RPG Site, and it's about a favorite of Dalton's called Star Ocean, the Second Story R. And the headline reads, Star Ocean, the Second Story R adds chaos difficulty, 10 wise men raid enemies, new equipment, and more NPC artwork illustrations. Publisher Square Enix and developer Gem Drops have unveiled update version 1.10 for Star Ocean: The Second Story R that features a lot of brand new additional content coming to the revered remake of the classic RPG adventure. The update and the following content is now available on PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC for free. Update version 1.10 adds a brand new ultra-hard difficulty called Chaos. Challenge your skills and train your party as enemy stats will be severely increased in this new mode. The Ten Wise Men were prominent antagonists in Star Ocean: The Second Story. Now, in version 1.10, players can fight an even more difficult version of them, since they can appear as raid enemies now. Defeat them, and they'll give you a jewel item to call upon them as assault action assists in battle. Other new content added in this update is new equipment that can be crafted in item creation, a character graphics collection to view various characters' expressions in their artwork, and an option to replay ending scenes you've unlocked. Plus NPCs Clyde, Alan, Eleanor, Mariana, Lefath, and Regis all have new artwork portrait illustrations when players interact with them in event scenes. And there is an update trailer out on YouTube. And the article does go on to kind of elaborate more on what I just said. Gives a couple of screenshots, especially of like the new NPC illustrations and all that. But if you're a fan, then you're going to get more out of this game.
Yeah. And if you want to read this stuff, I did retweet this over on the @JRPGReport Twitter. So if you want to check out these in more in-depth notes, feel free to dive into that. All right. I guess I will take the next one, which is from Gamatsu. Square Enix has released a four-part documentary series for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth titled Inside Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which uncovers the stories behind the making of the RPG through the eyes of the development team. In this four-part documentary series, dive deep into the creation of this new standalone RPG with candid insights and never-before-heard stories from a lineup of the series' directors, artists, designers, and voice talent, reads the press release. This series offers fans and newcomers a backstage pass to hear secrets about the game's vast and vibrant world, the powerful bonds between party members, and the rich, multifaceted stories and the quests that await in this legendary adventure. Oh boy. Okay. Let me see if I can do this. Across the four episodes, the documentary features interviews with Naoki Hamaguchi, Yoshinori Kitase, Tetsuya Nomura, Makoto Ise, Kaishi Kawamori, Misuto Suzuki, Takako Miyaki, Ichiro Yamaguchi, Shintaro Takai, Mizushi Sugawara, Teruki Endo, Motomu Toriyama, Kazushige Nojima, Dai Suzuki, Hiroyuki Yamaji. Did so well up into the Hidekazu Miyaki, Junichi Hayashi, Akira Iwasawa. I see why you waited to make me do this one. Cody Christian, Britt Baron, Brianna White, John Eric Bentley, Max Middleman, Susie Jung, Matt Mercer. Why does that name sound familiar to me?
He's been in a lot of video games. He's done voices for a lot of characters.
Okay, and then maybe that's why he sounds familiar to me. Caleb Pierce, Eri. That's the hardest one I've run into. And that's not... I think it's Eri Asano, Ben Sabin, Laurent Sautier, and Diana Kawamata.
Wah!
Yeah, so interviews with all of those people.
So, Matt Mercer plays Vincent. He plays Goro Majima. He plays Yusuke Kitagawa. Koma and Ezekiel in Starfield. He plays Minsk in Baldur's Gate 3. He plays Leon Scott Kennedy in Resident Evil Death Island. He plays Ganondorf in Tears of the Kingdom. He plays Crom in Fire Emblem Engage. Let me see if there's anything else. He plays Cassidy in Overwatch 2. And he plays a bunch of voices in Guild Wars 2. And he also plays a bunch of voices in the Nier series. So you've heard this guy's... Oh, he plays a bunch of characters in the Legends of Heroes series, too. So all those games that you love, he does voices in them.
Yeah. Apparently so. Apparently yeah. so.
And apparently he played Rhino in the Spider-Man cartoons. They brought him back for Persona 5 the Animation to play Yusuke. Plays a bunch of characters in Minecraft Story Mode. He plays a bunch of local pedestrians in Red Dead 2. So yeah, that's why that name is familiar to you. He's even played some characters in Dragon Ball. Oh, wow. He plays the field team leader and the huntsman in Monster Hunter World.
Oh, okay. So we'll be hearing him relatively soon on Steam Machine.
You hear him a lot. He is a very popular voice actor. But thank you for doing that story because, yeah, there's no way I was going to be able to read those names.
Do you want to take a crack at this next one? You want me to?
No, I'll do this one. This is from RPG Site. PAX East 2024, Visions of Mana, Second Opinion by Scott White. So this is an opinion piece. So I'm going to be reading this pretending to be Scott White because he wrote this article in first person. Holy crap, that is a great screenshot. When I hear the term mana... Memories of spell locking enemies into oblivion, infuriating CPU control party members, and one of my earliest forays into emulation / fan translations come flooding back to me. Square Enix's recent reinvestment in its other historic non-Final Fantasy RPGs, such as the Saga and the Mana franchises, has made Little Scott, the author, very happy. The Mana games, and I keep going back and forth between Mana and Mana, particularly the second and third games, Secrets of Mana and Trials of Mana, respectively, hold a special place in many retro RPG fans' hearts, myself included. That's why when the first new entry in nearly two decades, Visions of Mana, was announced back in December of last year at the Game Awards, it quickly shot up near the top of my most anticipated games of the new year. When the opportunity arose for me to get my hands on Visions of Mana, the first new entry in nearly two decades, I hopped on my fluffy pickle and headed to Boston. After a quick presentation laying out what I was about to play, one shorter free roam demo to get used to the controls, and the longer, more scripted one that led to a boss fight, I was let loose into this new world. Together with two companions and my furry pickle friend. Right away, I was struck by how much it resembled 2020's Trials of Mana remake in terms of visuals, but with more refinement. The world is cast in vibrant colors, with the far-off distance resembling a painting almost, while the characters faithfully adapt the series' signature designs into the third dimension. The three characters present in the demo included Vision's protagonist Val, along with a cat person of seemingly royal birth and a Mana series staple, a fairy, strangely with a southern drawl. Each had access to three potential class options, one coming from each of the two elemental spirits available, along with their default starting classes, allowing for some options to try. I was particularly impressed by the fact that each element grants a different class to each character, and not just the same one to every party member, with every class using a different weapon type and having different attack options. We still don't know how large the final cast of playable characters would be, but even with just the three available in the demo I played, that's 30 different classes, each with 10 levels of progression to them, although it is still a bit nebulous on what these levels will add, to play around with in your party, not to mention the possibility of advanced classes in the final release. I like a game that offers a lot of avenues for playing around with party compositions. I've always found that it makes replays much more enticing to do. Visions of Mana features a large, wide open world with plenty of goodies to track down and find. Even in the demo, Visions rewarded my exploration with treasure chests, crafting materials, and more, pushing me to try and reach that out-of-the-way ledge just to see what could be there. The traversal options at your disposal make even the sprawling areas pretty painless and quick to get around, thanks to the furry dog-like pickle you will earn that can quickly be summoned via a bell. While on foot, sprinting around and using the air dash also helped things along. I, along with a couple of other players, kept trying to discover a way to remain airborne permanently. We failed, but it was still a good time. After playing through the demo 5-ish times and vanquishing a very familiar giant green mantis boss, I can confidently say that I am excited for Visions of Mana to release. Mind you, I also came away with a good amount of questions and parts that I would like clarification or confirmation on, but those haven't put much of a damper on my anticipation for the game. It was clear that Visions still has some polish and tweaks it needs to go through before release. There was some pretty gnarly slowdown at times, and the target lock-on system in combat was rough, all caps. But I'm confident that those can and will be addressed before the game reaches consumers' hands. The release of a brand new Mana game is a big deal. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the team could stick the landing so that Visions of Mana is just the start of a brand new renaissance for this historic series. Visions of Mana will release for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox, and PC later this year. Do I need to play some Mana games?
I've enjoyed the Mana games that I've played. I've only dabbled in Secrets of Mana, and I have Legends of Mana on my Steam, but I haven't played much of it yet. But I have played Seiken Densetsu 3, which is Legends of Mana.
Oh, it's like the original?
I'm sorry. It's not Legends. It's Trials of Mana, I believe.
Oh, okay. That's the original name for it, correct?
Yes. I played the fan translation of it. And then I have Trials of Mana on PS4 and Steam, and I've dabbled in it as well. There is a character, though, in that game, and me and James used to talk about this when we would bring this game up on the JRPG Report back in the day when I was just a guest.
Now you're the head honcho. No, I'm the guest.
There was a little girl, a Wurwo, who she would talk like a this. She would talk like this, and she just is like, I don't want to do that. And she, oh man, it's just, I don't remember her name, but she's annoying. But she's like the only character that I disliked, and it's just because she just talks terribly.
And I'm guessing this was back before voice acting, so you had to read that terrible speech.
No. I'm talking about the remake. The Trials of Mana.
Oh, okay.
It is voice acting. My bad.
Ah. So they took the horrible reading text typing and they made it. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. But.
So maybe play with Japanese voiceover.
Yeah. And subtitles.
And subtitles.
Funny story. I haven't yet listened to Tadpog's Hunt for Red October episode because I'm not sure how I feel about a podcast with subtitles.
Shout out Tadpog, Tyler and Dave play old games. They're worth a listen. Go check them out. But don't listen to them around your kids. That was a good episode. I liked it. I just listened to it today.
Okay. I just wanted to get that dad joke out of the way.
Sabotage Studio will release a 3-player local cooperative mode for Sea of Stars, dubbed Single Player Plus. The studio has announced. A release date was not announced. This mode allows for 3 players to journey together in Sea of Stars, Sabotage Studio said, saying, true to the game's core turn-based rules, each player will engage in traversal and combat with a new co-op timed hits mechanic as they embark with friends on the Sea of Stars grand adventure. Additionally, the developer announced that Sea of Stars has been played by over 5 million people since launch. Sea of Stars launched for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC via Steam on August 29th, 2023. It is also available via PlayStation Plus game catalog for PlayStation Extra and Premium members, and Xbox Game Pass for console and PC.
Another game I need to play.
I believe, like it said, local cooperative mode, but if you're playing on PC, you can parsec it. Yeah, this is opening up a whole new multiplayer opportunity for people. And I think that's cool because I remember the thing about the Mana games back in the day was that you could do up to 3-player co-op.
That's cool, actually. I didn't know that about the Mana games.
Yeah, for Super Nintendo, if you had the thing that you could hook up for extra controllers, you could play 3-player on Secrets of Mana.
Okay, that's cool.
I always thought so, too. I think you had to play up to a certain point till you had the party members to do it, but even still, I think that was a cool thing back in the day.
And then what happens if you just play single player? Are they just automatic? They're computer controlled?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
All right. I'm going to let you gush over this next one.
Oh, I'm excited for this. Capcom has announced that the recently revealed HD remaster for Monster Hunter Stories will launch on June 14th for PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and PC. The monster-catching RPG originally released for Nintendo DS, 3DS in 2016. Additionally, Capcom has announced that Monster Hunter Story Store... Ugh, what is wrong with me today?
Jeez. You're an English teacher. Come on now.
Additionally, Capcom has announced that Monster Hunter Stories 2,
there you go,
Wings of Ruin, will launch for PlayStation 4 on the same day. Wings of Ruin was originally released for Nintendo Switch and PC in July 2021. As announced back during February's Nintendo Direct Partner Showcase, the remaster for Monster Hunter Stories includes HD visuals, new full English and Japanese voiceovers, a new museum mode, and game updates that never released for the English 3DS version. Pre-orders for both games will be available soon, offering bonus cutscenes. And then there's trailers below via Capcom. Now,
Bonus costumes,
yeah. I'm not going to read all this extra stuff because that's all from Monster Hunter Stories 2 Wings of Ruin. So why PlayStation 4, first of all? I guess they don't feel confident that the graphics are good enough for PS5?
Yeah, maybe. Or they're just catering to the people who still have a PS4, since like PS5s, I'm not sure they're as common as PS4s are in people's households.
That's true. That's because they were so hard to find for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But I played Monster Hunter Stories on 3DS, and well, it's a great game. I'm going to tell you, the graphics are rough. They have released it on mobile since, but it's better. It's not perfect because they did not release it with controller support, so you can only use touchscreen, and I was not a fan of that. Like right now, I could pull up my iPhone right now and I could just play it. It's on Apple Arcade, but why? That's, I don't know. So I have been looking for a modern way to play this game for a long time. For whatever reason, the 3DS version does not emulate well. When almost every other 3DS game emulates fine, this one does not work great. So getting a Switch version and a PC version, just, it's perfect. Because now whenever I want to go back and play this game, I could just play it on Steam.
It is amazing to me. And I'm not going to name the emulator because of what's been going on in the news recently.
Yeah.
But 3DS emulation has come a long way since I first started dabbling with it.
It's before all the shutdown stuff, it was borderline perfect. Like, it was at the point where you could play almost every game natively, and then some games you could actually kick up the resolution. And you could actually play them in, like, HD, for lack of a better term.
Which, I mean, would make the 3DS games look odd, but at the same time, some of them would look good. It just depended on.
Made them look smooth.
Yeah.
Made them look crisp. Like especially on the right screen.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine like a nice handheld screen.
Yeah.
Even the
Steam Deck. Like, the screen is big enough that you could just have a nice, big, upscale top screen, and then the bottom screen is just, like, in the corner. Just doing what it needs to do.
Man, I have my 2DS XL around here somewhere with, like, Shin Megami Tensei 4 and all kinds of stuff on it. I really should, like, play some of those games.
I was gonna say, 3DS, you could probably still mod that thing. Play a bunch of games on it.
Yeah, it's modded.
Nice.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. 2D, my 2DS XL? Oh, yeah. That thing is modded to the gills.
Okay, that's good, because there's no reason not to these days, because they shut everything down. You can't do anything with it other than play cartridges or mod it.
Yeah, and if they have a problem with people doing that after shutting the store down, they can lick my butt.
Thank you for being family-friendly there.
Yeah.
All right.
The PC version of Final Fantasy 16 is currently in the final stages of optimization, according to producer Naoki Yoshida. A demo is planned before release for users to determine whether the game can run on their PC. In terms of where we are in development currently, we are trying to figure out the final stages of optimization right now, Yoshida told Game Informer. When we can release the PC version might be dependent on that. The system requirements and specifications for PCs that the players will need. So we're trying to figure that out. Naturally, the PC specifications are looking to be somewhat high. I can imagine because Final Fantasy XV's PC requirements are somewhat high, and that's an old game. In terms of when it's going to come out and when we can announce it, I'd like to ask for more time on that. Yoshida continued, we're looking to release a demo for the PC version as well. Again, we can't really talk too much in terms of detail about when it's going to come out. I think in a little bit more time, we'll be in a better place to announce things. But one thing's for sure. It won't be too distant in the future. It won't be a year. It won't be 2 years. It'll probably be shorter than that. So stay tuned. Square Enix will host a Final Fantasy 16 panel at PAX East 2024 on March 22nd, which would have happened already, which will focus on the upcoming downloadable content chapter, The Rising Tide. While it is unclear whether there will be any news regarding the PC version here, it is possible. Final Fantasy 16 is available for PlayStation 5.
And next week, the 16-14 crossover starts on April 2nd. So if you want to get the cute little doggo as a pet and as a mount, now's the time to do it.
Yes,
absolutely. I've actually picked up Dark Knight. And so I'm thinking if you could get Clive's armor as a result of that collaboration, which I think you can as a glamour, that'd be a good armor set to have for Dark Knight. Because he's got that big old sword.
Oh, yeah. That would be sweet.
Hopefully it's dieable. They got to make it dieable.
They might. They sometimes make decisions that I question about things like that, but I guess we shall see.
Yeah. Next week, I'll report back. This next story from Gamatsu. Paper Mario Thousand Year Door for Switch launches May 23rd, now with revamped graphics and a suite of additional changes. The turn-based RPG first launched for GameCube on July 22nd, 2004 in Japan, followed by October 11th, 2004 in North America and November 12th, 2004 in Europe. The Switch version adds revamped graphics and a suite of additional changes that make the game easier to enjoy. The nefarious Exnauts are after the treasure behind the Thousand Year Door. With a map from Princess Peach and the help of a few locals, Mario journeys through a colorful world made of paper to find them first. To prevail in this quest, you'll have to level up Mario and his friends, master timing-based attacks and badges to impress the audience on the stage of combat, and make use of all the abilities that come with being cursed or conveniently made of paper, like folding into a plane to cross big gaps or turning sideways to slip through narrow openings. Surprises abound in this deep and engaging tale where everyone's got something to say and it's often not what you'd expect. Mario will meet all kinds of interesting folks on his journey, like the upbeat and studious Goombella and the shy but determined Koops. Some of these characters will need your help with their own quests or even join your party. Others like Peach and Bowser have stories of their own that you'll play between Mario's chapters. 20 years after the original game on the Nintendo GameCube system, this version for the Nintendo Switch has revamped graphics and a suite of additional changes that make the game easier than ever to enjoy. And there's a trailer for Mario Day 2024, which was March 10th, that announces the release date of the game. They keep saying suite of additional changes at least three times in this article. So I'm guessing there's going to be a suite of additional changes.
Yeah, I would assume so.
So this one is actually the most highly praised of all the Paper Mario games, and it was a very good game. I have my GameCube copy around here somewhere. But what was I going to say? I lost it. I think Nintendo is finally figured out where their fan base is or what the fans want, because they came out with Paper Mario Origami King and it was just a universal failure across the board. So the fact that they're actually going back to releasing games like the original Super Mario RPG and this one, I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, that this means that the next Paper Mario game we're going to get is going to be like Thousand Year Door, and it's going to have that battle system as opposed to the stuff that they've thrown out since that never stuck.
I don't have much experience with the game, so I don't really know. I've always wanted to play Thousand Year Door, so maybe I'll get the opportunity to now.
Well, if you ever want to, you could always just grab the GameCube version and boot up Dolphin and have some fun.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. I am going to skip the next one in line.
Okay.
And we're going to go with some sad news that happened since the last time that we recorded. Akira Toriyama, the legendary manga artist who created Dragon Ball and was influential in creation of many classic RPGs, died at the age of 68. The official Dragon Ball social media accounts announced that he'd passed away on March 1st of a subdural hematoma, essentially a bleed on the brain. It is our deep regret that he still had several works in the middle of creation with great enthusiasm, Bird Studio and Capsule Corporation, the companies behind Dragon Ball, said in a statement. Also, he would have had many more things to achieve. We hope that Akira Toriyama's unique world of creation continues to be loved for everyone for a long time to come. Toriyama's most famous work is, of course, Dragon Ball, which began life as a two-part manga called Dragon Boy in 1983. Few could have predicted that this comic would evolve to Dragon Ball, then explode into popularity with countless chapters of storytelling that was then adapted into anime, video games, film, and beyond. To those at RPG site, Toriyama will be most keenly remembered for his contribution to some of the greatest role-playing games of all time, often in collaboration with then-separate Enix and Square Corporations, two of Japan's foremost RPG producers. In the mid-80s, his unique art style was used to define the characters of Enix's Dragon Quest, the series that still uses his design and his style to this day. In 1995, he partnered with Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi and Dragon Quest boss Yuji Horii to co-create Chrono Trigger, which is rightly regarded as one of the greatest RPGs of its era, if not all time. Toriyama maintained a relationship with Sakaguchi over the years and went on to work with him on yet another new role-playing universe, designing the characters for his 2006 Mistwalker RPG Blue Dragon and its two handheld sequels. In 2021, he made a minor contribution to RPG site's 2021 Game of the Year Fantasian, designing one of the title's intricate dioramas that are used for the game's backgrounds. Toriyama's first posthumous video game, contribution will become next month in the form of Bandai Namco's Sandland, out next month. Sandland is an adaptation of a Toriyama manga of the same name from 2000 and was directly supervised by Toriyama. It is likely we will be seeing new work from Toriyama despite his death for years to come, because, as a statement announcing his death notes, he was busy and deeply creative man. In particular, for our audience, it's likely that he was deep into his work on Dragon Quest XII, The Flames of Fate. There will also doubtlessly be many upcoming Dragon Ball works in which he has been involved in. I believe that Mr. Toriyama taught me what professionalism and hard work were. Frequent collaborator and games legend in his own right, Hironobu Sakaguchi wrote on X. I respected him from the bottom of my heart, and I pray for his soulful rest in peace. Everyone at RPG Site and here at the JRPG Report, technically, would like to express our deepest condolences to Mr. Toriyama's family, friends, colleagues, and fans. His work had a profound impact on us all, and we thank him for that. And may you rest in peace, my good sir.
Yeah, very shocking, sudden, and unexpected passing. And I would have to say, like, aside from the Dragon Ball series, which I watched when I was a kid, Chrono Trigger definitely has to be, like, one of the best experiences of my childhood. And that had three great minds working on that game, and there's a reason that that game is a masterpiece that still holds up to this day.
Yeah,
and that's go ahead.
I was gonna say that's a game I hope gets that HD 2D treatment. I don't want to see a 3D remake of Chrono Trigger. Just give me that really pretty art style that they've been doing recently.
Yeah, even if like the Final Fantasy pixel remasters have been really nice looking, even though people tend to complain about those. Even something like that. Or just, you know, maybe just don't touch it. Maybe do what all the fans want and just leave it be. Because it really is a timeless game.
Yeah. And they could leave it that exact same way, but just make it look prettier. Not change anything else.
Yeah, all they have to do is upscale to HD and basically do what they did for Star Ocean.
Yeah, that or like the Octopath Traveler look, which I guess is kind of like the same as Star Ocean, yeah.
Yeah.
And like they're doing, you know, Dragon Quest 3.
Oh, are they doing Dragon Quest? Oh, that's right. We reported on that a couple times.
Dude, they announced that and then went radio silent on it. So I hope it's all right.
I will say one last thing. The latest Toriyama game that I've been involved in was Dragon Quest 11. Because I started playing that and then I kind of fell off it a little bit just because other stuff took over. But man, if that game isn't beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Dragon Quest XI is a fantastic game.
Yeah.
And talk about another game that's over 100 hours. I want to check out Blue Dragon. I just don't know. I don't have a 360.
So, emulation, my friend. We're almost there.
I was going to say, how is 360 emulation?
It's getting there. It's actually pretty decent. PS3 emulation is good, too. Like,
oh, yeah. That I know. That I know. Because Skate 3. All day.
Yeah. Yeah, but... Yeah, it's getting there. Actually, is Blue Dragon on Steam?
No.
Really? It was on 360?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, you would have to emulate it if you don't have a 360.
So,
Or, unless it's on Game Pass, that's the only other thing I could think of.
Not for PC.
Crap. All right. We're going to, that's going to be my mission now. How am I going to get Blue Dragon to you?
You can read this next one too, if you'd like.
Yeah. Tokyo Xanadu new project announced for console. Falcom has announced the tentatively titled action RPG Tokyo Xanadu new project for unspecified consoles, Switch 2, in celebration of the series' 10th anniversary. A release date was not announced. It has been 10 years since the release of Falcom's first modern-day action RPG Tokyo Xanadu. Set in the Japanese city of Kyoto, this new game depicts the story of juveniles who travel around the otherworldly realm known as Xanadu. While it shares the same world as Tokyo Xanadu, which is set in the Japanese city of Tokyo, the setting is all new. It is currently in development as a completely new title with all game systems built from the ground up, so please look forward to it. And there's a whole bunch of screenshots as well as a teaser trailer in this Gamatsu article. Pretty interesting looking. I'm guessing it looks almost Shin Megami Tensei-like, in which they're talking about an otherworldly realm. However, it takes place like in Tokyo or in Kyoto, which means it's probably like a post-apocalyptic version of that exact thing.
I'm trying to remember. Let me go look on Steam real quick.
That's fine. Well, you're doing that, because this ties into our next story. When we were playing Neptunia a couple weeks ago, did you notice at the beginning that the console that sucked the Neptune and Netgear into the Zero Dimension looked like a Dreamcast?
Yep.
And then they're like, why do these buildings look like Planet Neptune's buildings?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Dreamcast is apparently an apocalyptic world.
Well, yeah, because the Dreamcast was a failure, wasn't it?
It was a colossal failure, but yeah. Some great games. We wouldn't have Soul Calibur if it weren't for Dreamcast.
And Uzume was Orange Heart, and Dreamcast's whole shtick was orange.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know, completely different podcast, but we didn't bring it up on Steam Machine, and I just thought that since we're talking about Neptunia in this next story, and it was fresh in my mind, I would bring it up.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Yeah, there was a lot we didn't touch on that episode, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
It's hard, though, with a game like that. It's just really hard to hit everything because there's a lot.
Yeah, and speaking of Neptunia, my good sir, action RPG Neptunia Game Maker R Evolution will launch for PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and Switch, both physically and digitally, on May 14th in the West. Publisher Idea Factory International has announced, my goodness, it will feature English and Japanese voiceovers with English, French, and Spanish subtitles. The game first launched in Japan on August 10th, 2023. Pre-orders for the standard and limited editions are coming soon. The latter includes the official hardcover art book, official soundtrack, two cloth posters, a steel game case, reversible cover sleeve, a collector's box, and an exclusive trading card. In Europe, a day one edition will be available for all platforms for £54.99, and a dual pack, or I guess that's Euro, and dual pack plus will be available for Switch for €119.99. The day one edition has a reversible cover sleeve, older Neptunia cloth poster, set of four stickers, acrylic standee, and a collector's box. The Dual Pack Plus includes Neptunia Game Maker R Evolution Day 1 Edition, Neptunia Sister vs. Sisters Day 1 Edition, and a acrylic Sekishi. In the latest installment of the Neptunia series, the goal of this game is to rebuild and manage a game company. Build your company and turn it into a huge corporation. The latest entry to the world of Neptunia is better than ever. The battle system has been expanded and now allows for a four-person party. Dungeons can be explored at high speed on a motorcycle, and heartfelt photo mode will let you express yourself via fun manga-like creations. Game Studio of the Year. Play as the main protag, Older Nep, and grow a previously defunct gaming studio to success. Well, it's funny because we met Older Nep for the first time in Mega Dimension Neptunia that we played for the Steam Machine.
I was going to say, I'm kind of glad that they're focusing on Older Nep, because she hasn't really gotten her time to shine. And she's from a different universe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, because the Neptunia that we're used to is not older yet.
No, she's like very teenage immature.
Yeah.
I mean, she still looks immature, but she's got a little bit more wisdom to her, I guess. Yeah, she looks older.
Building a game studio requires strong developers, cutting-edge video games, and expansion of your market. Choose wisely and become the biggest game studio of the year. Boost your party stats with the help of creating in-game real-time and choose developers to work on your next hit game. Add other game elements found in dungeons and monsters to elevate your video game development and for further and passive boosts to your party. Ride in style through the dungeons and sell your games on your trusty purple motorcycle. As you explore the dungeons and find game element items to add to your next breakthrough hit, you also gain more shares of that location and supervise a party of four to lead your company to the top. But there may be other game studios ready to take you down. With a revamped battle system, chained attacks, and transformative specials, Older Nep and friends are ready for victory. I'm hype, but I hope they bring this to PC as well.
Where is it? It's not coming to PC?
It just says for these physical editions are coming out for console. I don't know if it's actually coming to PC.
Oh, okay. Oh, I hope it does too, because That'd be weird for them not to put it out on PC. I have to watch the trailer later because I didn't even know this was a thing. And
I knew of it, but I haven't seen a trailer for it yet, so I would like to see it too as well.
Yeah, so I don't know. I really like this artwork of Older Nep too.
Yeah, dude.
Oh man, Unicorn Overlord. Jeez, why does this game look so beautiful?
Dude, it looks fantastic.
Dude, I love that style of artwork. Like that's, I know I keep referencing Final Fantasy Tactics, but that's really what they look like, and it's beautiful. I this game looks great. I need to play it. I don't know why I'm not. I know why I'm not, but dear Lord, it's so beautiful. Atlas and Vanillaware released the patch notes for the day one update V1.01 for Unicorn Overlord and detailed the changes to the game's difficulty. The patch will go live at release on March 8th, 2024, which was a few weeks ago. The day one update adds new difficulty levels for Unicorn Overlord that were not originally available in the demo. Whereas previously only three difficulty options were selectable. The update will add one new level for a total of four. Those are story, normal, tactical, and expert difficulty modes. Furthermore, after downloading and installing the patch, players will be able to transfer their progress from the demo into the final release. Atlas also shared that the new normal difficulty level is the equivalent to the easiest difficulty level, casual, sweet, or story, depending on the version of the game, found in the demo version, and the new story difficulty is an even easier option for players wanting to focus on enjoying the narrative. Additionally, all difficulty levels have been slightly balanced for the final release. Unicorn Overlord is out on March 8, 2024 for Switch, PS4, PS5, and Xbox. A demo is available and save data can be carried over to the full release.
No love for the PC.
No love for the PC on that one. All right, you want to finish us off here?
Yeah, and I'm going to condense this one a bit, but Atlas has announced that Persona 3 Reload Expansion Pass, which will culminate with the story expansion episode Aegis, The Answer, in September. It will also be available for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate users as part of the Perks program. So basically, what is going to be coming out for this is The Answer. And that's what the big part is that everyone's focused on. And that is the part that was in FES, so a sequel to Persona 3 that was included in Persona 3 FES released in 2007. Players will take on new battles as the main character Aegis, who has awakened to the power of the wild card. In a shocking twist, an emotionally charged storyline where the huge hit with users as at the time, and even created a rabid fan base of its own. After receiving an unabatedly enthusiastic response, the remake is now ready for release, with Episode Aegis The Answer Persona 3 Reload will come to its conclusion. And as far as the expansion pass goes, it's going to feature new costumes, new background music, and an extended story, like I mentioned, The Answer. It will include some tracks from Persona 5 Royal, Persona 4 Golden, and that's going to be in Wave 1, available March 12th, so that is out. And then available in May, it will unlock Velvet Room themed costumes and BGMs to further customize your dungeon experience. And then finally, in September, the final chapter arrives. After unveiling the mysteries of the Dark Hour, fighting epic battles through Tartarus, and the unforgettable events of Persona 3 Reload, the Seas members find themselves trapped in a never-ending March 31st journey through the Abyss of Time, as Aegis, and undertake new challenges and uncover the cause of this strange fate. I thought that said strategy, but it was strange. Strange fate and the truth of what happened on that day. Delve into this final chapter with cutting-edge graphics, modernized quality of life features, fresh animations, and user interface with a rearranged soundtrack. Persona 3 Reload is available for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC via Steam and Microsoft Store. It's also available via Xbox Game Pass.
So this was in the original game?
No.
And it was not?
No, this was in, you know how Persona always does the release and a re-release?
Yes.
This was in the re-release.
Okay.
Persona 3 FES.
So instead of doing a Persona 3 FES reload, they're just putting this chapter in as DLC, which is probably the better idea.
Yeah, they finally made a smart decision like that.
Took them long enough.
Right.
All right. I'm going to bring us home with some house cleaning.
Yes, sir. If I can just find my little... There it is. If you want to go check us out over on Facebook with all of the dust bunnies and tumbleweeds, it is facebook.com/JRPG Report. You want to find us where we're much more active. It is at JRPG Report over on Twitter. If you want to donate to the show, which I'm not going to lie, if the show made some more money, I would be more motivated to find energy to do it. That is just a cold, hard fact of life, ladies and gentlemen. I don't mean that to be negative, but it is the truth. If you want to donate it, just $1 is all I ask a month. And if everyone who listens donated $1, that would make a big difference in my life. It really would. Patreon.com/JRPG Report.
And my life's great. I'm just helping him out.
You'd get some of the money too. You know that.
Nah, I wouldn't even ask for it.
But if you do donate to the show, you can get your name read out on each and every episode like these wonderful people: Jake W., Jordan K., Kolarian, Master Loot, and Kana. Thank you all very, very much. And check out the Steam Machine Podcast, a bi-weekly PC gaming show where me and my buddies Nate and Willie play through the backlog. We recently did Mega Dimension Neptunia Victory 2. Please go check out that episode. Get those numbers up for me. It is a JRPG, so, you know, it's that goodness. It's that goodness.
And if you like me, I'm on that episode.
And Mikhailov is also on that episode. And then I think the next JRPG coming down the pipeline is going to be Monster Hunter
World. Monster Hunter World.
And that is barring that Nate or Willie doesn't pick one. I think I know what Nate's going to pick, and it's JRPG adjacent if it is what I think it's going to be. But of course, I'm not going to say it. I don't want to spoil his pick, but I think I've gathered enough hints. But Willie, I have no idea. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. Go ahead and plug your stuff, my good sir.
You can find me at Team Retrogue on YouTube. You can also find me in the Steam Machine Discord. And if you want to become a lovely patron of the JRPG Report, you can also talk to me in that Discord. That is a perk of being a patron. You get to come hang out with us.
Yeah, and eventually, I know I always mention this, and we haven't found time, but I know eventually, when work calms down, we will get a Let's Play where one of us is playing and we'll both do commentary. It'll be a good time. That'll be on the Patreon as well. $1 or more.
We need to set a date. I think if we set a date and commit to it, we'll actually get it done.
We need to pick a game first.
That's true. We do need to pick a game.
I tell you what, people in the Discord, on the Patreon, or you can also tweet us on Twitter. Give us recommendations. Maybe we'll put together a poll with some recommendations that we get, and we'll see what happens. Because I would like to do some of the more like classic JRPGs that I've never gotten around to.
You know, Earthbound.
I think that would be fun.
I've never played Earthbound.
I've never played Earthbound either. So that could be one. So if you know, just let us know. Let us know what you think. Any of the older consoles are open because we can figure out ways.
We can figure out ways. Nintendo will never shut us down.
They're not going to get us, my good sir. Yes, that is a tattoo reference. And on that note, for Mikhailov, my name is Dalton. And as always, everybody, do me the biggest favor that you can. Get back out there and level up.